B-Pod Studios.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Once again, it's more bang for your buck. And after all, this is free, so there's a lot of bang. It's the Talkin' Rock podcast with three singers from three different bands coming up here in just a few minutes. Danny Warsnoff from Asking Alexandria is up first. New record drops on October 1st, which is tomorrow as I post this. Chris Voss from the record company, their record drops on October 8th. And Jack from Dead Poets Society, their record's out. And all these bands are on the tour trail, which is really cool because remember last year, there was like nobody was out there touring. And now it's cool to see some of these bands getting back in action. Some are having to pull back. My wife was just supposed to, watch someone's kids or something for the Zac Brown concert that some friends were going to, and they had to cancel that because of COVID growing through the band. But we'll get through this together. We're in a lot better shape than we were last year at this time, even though some say it's still not great. But concerts are happening, things are happening, so we'll see what goes on with that. In the meantime, the guys from Asking Alexandria, they're going on tour with the guys from I got to rent. Oh, Data Remember. That's right. And some other bands. Had to check my notes there real fast. But Danny was cool to talk to. It's been a while since I've actually talked to him. That first song, Alone Again, is just killer from the band. And at first, I got on this three-way call with Danny, and the connection was just awful. We were rudely interrupted by technology. So we fixed that, and we were off and running with Danny today from Asking Alexandria. And I just asked him a simple question. Tell me about the album.
I think it's a very widespread, wide feeling, and very varied album. I've been asked a lot of times that exact question. It feels impossible to answer because there's so many different aspects to it and different things to it. So I've been struggling to find a way to describe it as a whole. I think it's very much the sum of its parts. Yeah, that's a challenging one.
Yeah. So
It's good.
It's good
and we like it.
Well, I guess that's the most important thing. So, obviously, we've gone through some unprecedented times. How did that affect the album?
Not at all. Personally, I think time off is something we've wanted for a long time. So, if anything, at least from my personal experience and my personal time with it, it was the best thing I could have asked for. I think I thrived in that environment. I found it very productive. I found it very useful and very very good for me.
Yeah. So you're saying, though, in these unprecedented times, it actually did have a little bit of effect, like you were just saying. At first you said it had none, but actually sometimes some of these artists and these rock stars I talked to, they kind of looked forward. I shouldn't say look forward. They kind of took the break in stride because their lives are pretty cyclical with putting out albums and then, touring and putting out album and touring and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, it was more so I didn't have to go on tour. I got to spend the whole thing in my studio, writing songs for people and recording stuff for myself and for other people. And then obviously leading up from there to going in the studio to record this Asking record.
Yeah. So with this new record out, what was the goal of putting this record out besides putting out a record that you love? Do you guys ever have some sort of mission in mind when you put a new album out?
Yes and no. I think we're always trying to put out the biggest and best thing we can. We do treat this as a business, and we want to succeed, and we want to do very well. But at the same time, more than anything, it felt like the right time. It felt like we had an opportunity to come together and create something in a different way. And we really just kind of wanted to make the most of that opportunity.
Now, you guys are actually kind of releasing this record, when things are, I guess, for lack of a better term, starting to kind of get back to normal. Has this record been done for a while?
No, we recorded this in May.
Okay.
Yeah, we flew in. We did the entire month of May in the studio. We lived in it. We lived within the sound, within the album, and slept on the floor. And I slept on the floor in the piano room, and yeah, we very much surrounded ourselves with this record.
Now, I've heard before that, you know, as far as writing music and stuff, when you get a guitar, you tend to kind of write towards a little bit heavier stuff, and the piano is the opposite way. Do you ever catch yourself maybe leaning towards one or the other more than normal?
No, it's more so that I haven't yet found the ability to write anything remotely not super depressing on a piano.
So yeah.
I still write a whole bunch of sad stuff on guitar, but I write a lot of rock stuff on the guitar, and then when I get to the piano, that's usually where I'm writing. I'm kind of going slower, and it's more of the balance, which I mean, realistically, and it's kind of more my speed anyway. That's what I like to do. That's where I find myself sat down the most.
What are some of your favorite ballads?
My favorite ballads? Anything Michael Bolton has ever put out. I grew up as a very big Bryan Adams fan. And then I think all the Dells work is beautiful. Bruno Mars has some phenomenal ones. I think I actually just sat down and watched the new Aretha Franklin movie the other day. That's wall to wall, just incredible, everything. Walking in Memphis is one of my, it is my favorite song of all time. That's a million-dollar question.
Yeah.
But I've for a long time wanted to do like an album of my favorites, and I've yet to wean it down under 200. It's more like a box set than anything.
Yeah, when I asked you about your ballads, I thought you were going to have some sort of 80s ballads, but you kind of lean towards more of the pop rock ballads, huh?
Yeah, well, yes and no. I mean, there's obviously a lot of incredible work within the 80s, but I think musically, I'm a lot more 70s and maybe even going back further to the 60s and 50s. I have a great love for pop music. That's, I think, such an incredible pull to draw from as a songwriter and as a producer to use as reference. I mean, it's full of some of the most talented people in the industry when it comes to songwriting. Yes, it's also full of corny, meaningless drivel. But when you sift through that, there are some of the most profound and great moments throughout history, kind of within that genre. And I think it's important to pay attention to things outside of what you are creating in that moment. Yes, I'm the singer of Ask Andrew, but I'm going into an Ask Andrew record. I don't listen to things that sound like Ask Andrew. I listen to great songwriting and great vocal moments that are beautiful to me to kind of draw from them.
Now, you just mentioned Aretha Franklin, and we're here in Detroit and stuff. So did Motown play, does that play any influence into your musical likings?
It did and does, but I think possibly more than I realize. I think there's probably a lot more influence that comes from places that I have heard and have not studied from the whole Motown scene that have just been moments that I've held on to. I've never thought of myself or ever claimed to be a well studied in musical history and different musical artists. I'm usually the person that is a big fan of something, and then find someone else who's a big fan of it, and then find myself lost very quickly within the conversation because I've done very little studying within it. I've always more so focused on the sound and the tone. I like that. Cool. Let's now channel that. Figure out how that's done versus the history and discography of a lot of artists, which I know it puts me in the bad books of a lot of people who have these conversations with. But I've always been drawn more to the songs and the stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know that you guys moved, well, you actually moved to the States back in the early 2000s, 2008 or something along those lines. So
yeah, we all did.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, you guys came over here. So what does success in the U.S. mean to a band like Asking Alexandria?
Well, this is where we found success to begin with. We played our first show in Illinois. We did our first tour. In the U.S., we got our first record deal, we got our first Eddie, we got our first manager, we got our first everything was here. But it's been a confusing story because while we are an English band of English people, we have done pretty much all of the work in the U.S. This is where, kind of from the start, we knew we wanted to be and where we knew we wanted to work.
Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned an English band of English people. It's funny because, like, there's a band, like, for example, like Judas Priest, for the longest time, you had to be English even to get in the band until they got Scott Travis back in 1990. Yeah. Would you guys ever replace anybody in your band with just an American kid?
We don't want to replace anyone in our band with anyone.
Right. I'm just speaking hypothetically. It'd be kind of funny, though. It's like,
I took about a year and a half absence from the band, and the guy who took my place was from the Ukraine. So I think we're pretty open to different folks from different strokes.
Yeah, I think that was kind of like an old English thing, like with Iron Maiden and Priest and Black Sabbath. Even, you know, they had to always have an English guys in the band like that. So, but yeah, the success. Yeah, go ahead.
I think it's possibly a very easy way to find demise pretty quick, because all of a sudden you're drawing from a specific pool instead of looking for people who are best for the job. And there's undertones within there that we can take from within society itself, which is I think people sometimes look for people from certain walks of life instead of people who are necessarily best for the job at hand.
Right. Well, listen, Danny, I know my time's running out here, but I appreciate your time. See what's on the inside. I'll never forget. I think that one of the first times I saw you guys was Rocking the Range, and you were running around the press tent with a football helmet on. Do you remember that?
I do not. I don't know, but that was pretty par for the course for me back then.
Yeah, I know that you're sober now, so that's good. And, man, I'll tell you what, looking forward to seeing you guys on the Day to Remember coming up here in Detroit next week. But good luck on the new record. Alone Again is killer, man. It's such a badass song.
Thank
I love
much.
That. So,
very much.
Well, good luck, Danny. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks again.
Absolutely. Have a good day.
There you go, Danny from Asking Alexandria. Like I said, on tour right now with the guys from A Day to Remember and a few other bands as well. See What's on the Inside drops on October 1st, like I said before, as I record this podcast. That's coming up tomorrow on Friday.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Up next is Chris Voss from the band The Record Company, a really cool, just stripped down rock and roll band. Normally a three-piece, but they've added a couple guys here and there. We'll talk about that. Chris has a lot of cool stories about Bob Seger and touring with Bob Seger, and he's got a lot of Motor City connections, of course, where this podcast emanates from. Their new record's called Play Loud. That comes out on October 8th. You can also watch this in Zoom. That's on the description of today's episode as well. You can see my ugly face. And Chris's, well, I'm not going to say pretty face, but just watch it. Hey, man, first of all, thanks for the time. How's things in your world?
Hey, we're getting ready to go back out on tour. So, you know, all may not be completely right with things, but we are going to rock. So I can't wait to get back at it.
Well, your microphone's working. Everything seems to be in order. So I guess we're okay, right?
Stacking successes, my friend, one at a time.
Yeah.
However small or large, we're ready to roll the wheels and let the wires fire, you know?
Yeah, let the wheels go where they may. It's funny, somebody just asked me what I was wearing, and I thought, you know, I better show you what I'm wearing, because apparently
you
didn't get the memo to wear the WRF t-shirt, but I'm just kidding you. So
yeah, that's a record company t-shirt for those of you listening. That's appreciated on a high level. I'm also wearing an artist, Mike Kroll, my buddy. He's a great artist. So we're both representing artists.
What's that say? Verse, chorus, verse, burn bridge.
It says verse, chorus, verse, burned chorus, bridge. Burned bridge, chorus.
That's awesome.
he's a good punk rock band right there.
Yeah, so. There you go. That's cool, man. Yeah. So you guys getting ready to go now? You know, I've been asking a lot of the artists I've been talking to. Now, you guys have played a couple gigs, right? So what was it like going back on stage for the first time after being, you know, told you couldn't?
There's no way to undersell how sacred and beautiful and inspiring it was. There's no way to say it high enough. getting piece of your soul back, getting to, you know, experience these songs for the first time, live, the new songs, even getting, because the album isn't full, you know, we've got a couple songs that have hit the pavement, like How High and whatnot, but, you know, and having not gotten to playing songs that are new in front, we play a few that people hadn't heard, and getting to see what just that initial cold splash of water in the face looked like, and getting that reception, and then playing the old songs. And we're a five piece on this tour because we went in on this record with Dave Sardi, the producer who did like Modest Mouse. He just did the new Modest Mouse record. He's done Oasis, Red Hot Chili Peppers, LCD Sound System. So he's got a pedigree, and he helped. He just, we went in, we said, instead of making a record that's like what we've done before, which is make the record in our own house, we're like, we're going to hang to our roots, but we're going to expand this sound. So keyboards, two guitars, sometimes there's just all sorts of stuff, four or five part harmonies at times. And so at the end of it, we're like, well, we can't do this as a three piece and stay live. Johnny Elkins, who was my guitar tech, really soulful, like grimy kind of rock and roll guy, real good guy, good band player. You know, just he's not an ace. He's got heart when he plays.
Right.
And that's what we need. Cause none of us are aces, you know, we're just a rock and roll band. And then Wesley Flowers, he was this guy from Georgia who's playing keys, and he's just such, he's so positive. It's like, he's like bringing in this, this fresh perspective all the time. So, we played four or five shows, and they've all been really killer. And it's been so fun for me after all these years of being a three piece, not having to hold down the whole guitar section plus the singing plus the, it's like play with a little space sometimes. If I want to get after it, I can get after it. I want to sit back and hear the band, I can sit back and hear the band, sing a chorus and hear like three other people singing with you. It's like, yeah. Wow, this is a good idea.
Yeah. Do you ever think maybe you should have done this earlier?
Well, you know, I believe that you can't change the past, and yeah. I don't really have, there are things I would have done differently, but I don't have regrets as far as like, I always look at everything as a learning experience. So we got where we got, and we're here, and we're on the radio in Detroit. So, hey, what can I say? You know, we got the tour with Bob Seger, one of Detroit's finest. So we did that as a 3/4 piece. So, whatever it took to get here.
Yeah, man. Well, I'll tell you what, I got a lot to talk about this record, but what was it like touring with Bob Seger? Did you get a chance to meet him and stuff?
Yes. And so the first album, I could say so many stories here, but I'll try and keep it as brief as I can. But because this is Detroit, A, we got the gig because of that Sunday night gig we played in Detroit. His people saw us there.
Really?
Yes. And they were like, oh yeah, Bob had liked these guys, and he approves his opening acts, so he approved us. And when you just found out, just like sitting and growing up on a dairy farm in Wisconsin, and I married a Detroit girl, by the way.
That's right.
Seger was in Dad's. I don't remember ever not hearing his music. I mean, he was in Dad's collection. You know, Dad was always spinning Seger, the Boss. You know, all that stuff. And I loved it. And so when we found out that he'd approved us, that was crazy. Then we show up at the first show, and he came out. We were doing our sound check, and we're playing our sound check. And all of a sudden, he comes out from the back, and he sits down and starts watching us. And I'm like, oh, my. That's like, that guy's not even real to me, you know? And afterwards, he came up and he said, hello, welcome to the tour, which was amazing. Second night, there's so many things. He was so down earth, man. It was ridiculous. Second night, that first night, we didn't get a very long sound check because of just the way things go. He was just starting. We were doing the thing. Second night, he comes up to me as he's leaving the stage, and I'm about to go on a stage. So I'm trying to give him his space, and he looks over at me. He goes, hey, last night you didn't – actually, he said from the stage. Excuse me. There were so many of these experiences. He goes – he sees me standing next to the stage, and he goes, these guys didn't get a good enough sound check last night. Let's make sure they get time. And I'm like, not one person was there to see us. And I told that story from the stage every night because I was like, this is a person. The reason he could write those songs is he never forgot what it's like to be me, it's like to be you, you know? And then another thing that was just astounding is he's at the end of the tour. Well, we played the Forum in Los Angeles, which is like this big place in LA that's like legendary. And he comes out and we're doing our sound check. And every time he'd come out for a sound check, I'd get really professional in my head and go, all right, we got to get through this. We got to get through this fast. And, well, we were playing a 35-minute set or whatnot, and he comes out, and my wife had said to me, Chris, he probably want, you know, he doesn't get to go out and see bands. He probably wouldn't mind hearing a song or two. So he's sitting in the middle of the forum, and it's Bob Seger in an empty forum. And this was the most memorable audience of the tour, I might add. And there were some amazing ones. And I, after our first 30 seconds of our song, we were already ready to go. We're a rock and roll band. We don't need to sit up there all day long. So I just said through the microphone, echoing through the forum, kind of off the mic and on the mic, I go, Bob, do you want to hear the set? And he just raises his water bottle and he goes in his big booming voice. Nobody's in there, remember. I hear it from his mouth. He goes, play it. So we start playing the set. We get about halfway through the second song. He stands up. He starts shaking his water bottle and he walks forward and sits in about the third or fourth row, dead center. And we finish the set. And afterwards, we have video proof. It's on YouTube. That afterwards, I walked over and I was like, Bob, thanks so much. And he said, he's like, that's good, SH blank, because this is FCC.
Right.
And he goes, you got to kill it at home. That's what he said. And I was like, oh, my God. And then when I introduced my wife to Bob Seger, I had gotten so comfortable with the man. And I'm like, hey, Bob, this is my wife, Valerie. And I've never seen her get, she works in like movies and stuff out here. I've never seen her like get freaked out by somebody. And she's like, and I forgot, I was like, oh my God, she's from Detroit. This probably was a huge moment, you know? And he's just like, oh, hi, Valerie. Nice to meet you. And he just, you know, kept on going. He was amazing. Last night of the tour. I know I'm going on about this, but I figured this is the station to do it on.
That's right.
Last night of the tour, Bob Seger goes to, we waited to have the night moves. You know,
well, hold on. You froze. You waited for the night moves. Go ahead.
Okay. And let me make sure my connection here is good. Got the right. Okay. Yes. Sorry about that. Yeah. Well, so we wait for the night moves record and we go, hey, Bob, would you mind signing this record? And he goes, oh, yeah, sure. So he signs the record and we're standing on stage in Vegas at the big, you know, spot in Vegas that he's going to play. And this is the last night of our leg of the tour with him. Take the picture. Unbelievable. And then I don't know which one of us had the guts to do it, but our bass player, Alex, named his dog Seeger like 11 years ago. Like this dog's about 10, 11 years. And so when we formed the band 10 years ago, Seeger was part of the band.
Right.
The Seeger, the dog.
Yeah.
And he's a big part of our Instagram and everything. And so you tell Bob Seeger, this was amazing. Bob, we have a dog and we named him Seeger. And he goes, instead of being like weirded out, he goes, really? You got any pictures of him? And we're like, yeah, sure. We show him a picture of, we're showing Bob Seger a picture of our dog Seger. And Bob Seger goes, hey, he looks like my dog. And he's starting to get one of his guys to try and get his picture of his dog. It was just, okay. I mean, you know, it was amazing. It was astounding. It was everything you could ever wish. And the guy is soulful as hell, friendly as hell. His whole crew was. So he did a Midwest proud, man, as he has for all these long years. And it was an honor. And I'll tell anybody within shouting distance that he was one of the nicest people I've ever met. And it's amazing to meet someone that's famous for that long. And he seemed unchanged. But when he got up on stage, boy, man, seeing the whole band play by myself, I'm sitting there watching him play Against the Wind. I'm like, there's probably someone on the planet that paid $10 million to have this moment. I'm like listening to him sound check, and he would sound check like it was the show.
Right.
Like the whole song, you know, and that band was tight, my friend.
Yeah.
There were a lot of tears shed during that tour. A lot of them.
Yeah. Bob is great. I've had a chance to meet him several times. And one of my highlights of my career was watching him sound check in an empty Palace of Auburn Hills here in Detroit. He did Turn the Page, and I'm like, I'm in this room by myself practically, and he's playing Turn the Page. So it was that's really cool. But speaking of Bob Seger, I'm just going to throw this out there. Are you familiar with Frankie Miller?
No.
Okay, because Bob Seger got a lot of his stuff from Frankie Miller, who's a European and English guy. And maybe you should go down that rabbit hole a little bit.
I thought you were going to ask me about Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels.
No. No, Kid Rock one night, he's like, hey, do you ever hear Frankie Miller? He starts playing, and some of the songs that Bob Seger sang were Frankie Miller songs.
I'm going to have to check that out for sure.
Yeah, so anyways.
That's great. Yeah. Awesome. New project.
Yeah, there you go. You can go down that rabbit hole. So the new record drops coming up on October 8th. And, of course, the first single was How High. It's so funny because I watched the video, and I was at a party over the summer that looked just like that video with country artists playing, believe it or not, with Chase Rice and Billy Currington. It's like the craziest thing. But have you guys ever played an outdoor party like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, the whole premise of the video was and it was filmed in that little window where everybody thought this was going to be the summer of love, you know, or before the Delta and all that.
Yeah,
crap.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like we all had gotten the test and everything. We're like, yeah, all right, we're going to get together. So everybody on that video, from the production to us, to the director, to the people that showed up, nobody had been around really anybody in a long time. So we threw down. And the idea of the video was there was a DJ party going upstairs. And then we were the band that was hired to play the other party that nobody wanted to be at.
Right.
And you can go watch the video if you want to know how it ends. But I ended up jumping into the swimming pool. The whole party jumped into the pool. It kind of had that Almost Famous kind of vibe. I've never jumped into a pool with a microphone, and nor should you. That was an unplugged microphone. I don't mean to spoil the Hollywood magic, but don't do that. And it was awesome, man. I mean, that was just a day of extreme love. And then having that be the culmination of having worked with Dave Sardi, who produced the record, and it's done everybody from Modest Mouse to Chili Peppers to Oasis and LCD Sound System, Wolfmother, Jet, these bands. Yeah. Him and what he brought to our sound, and then getting to bring that all to that moment of that making the video for the single. And that's the first time we've ever made a video like that, where it's like we were like, let's make an old school, like, fun throw down party, like rock and roll video, man, like people jumping in swimming pools and having beers and getting crazy. And we had like kind of like the group of people who were a little like more like, say, in their 40s and 50s and 60s down at the party listening to the band. And then all the kids were upstairs. They all come down, they get together, and they're all in the pool. The cops come to bust the party. They end up jumping in the pool. It's let's get together, folks. Let's be one,
Yeah, I was wondering when you shot that because of the pandemic and all that. But record, Play Loud, I mean, obviously that the title says it all, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was just like when we named our band The Record Company. It kind of came out of this defiant, one of our biggest, we formed the band, two Detroit legends helped form our band. One was John Lee Hooker. We listened to John Lee Hooker's Hooker and Heat record in 1971 with Canned Heat. Go listen to that if you don't know it, Detroit. It's fantastic. One of the John Lee's best. And then before we formed the band, about a week before we got together for our first hangout, like jam, I saw Iggy with Mike Watt at the Palladium and under the name of the Stooges while they were still going touring under that. And I walked out of there absolutely on fire to play in a rock and roll band. So that all was part of it. And now re-ask your question, because I just got so excited I forgot what the hell I was talking about.
Are we supposed to play this record loud?
Yes. Yeah, so the defiance of naming our band came out of that idea of like, we named ourselves The Record Company because I was like, I'm in Los Angeles. I'm in a rock and roll band. We're a three-piece. I'm playing lap steel. I'm blowing harmonicas. Nobody's going to sign this band. Let's call ourselves The Record Company and cut out the middleman. Ironically, also, where the label got interested in us, I'm just realizing all these Detroit connections. I've thought about it before, but never had it just so in focus. At the Fox in Detroit, we're opening for Brian Setzer, and that's where the label saw us.
Mm.
And they got it, So we started talking to them then, and that's how we got on where the beginning of the conversation occurred. And then the name Play Loud, how did that happen? It was the same deal. I was looking through all our bios and stuff. It was the middle of the pandemic. We'd made the record, and I was just like, I knew how it sounded, and I just like got sick of looking at everything that was on there. It was like rock and roll band who plays blah, blah, blah. It was like I just deleted it all in an act of defiance, and I wrote in all caps. It said The Record Company, and then you're supposed to write what you are, and I just wrote Play Loud, and that's it. And then all of a sudden I looked at it, and I said to myself, I wonder, that kind of works. And then I sent it to Alex and Mark, and I'm like, I think I might have just named the record. And we've been together 10 years. So like just like any 10-year relationship, it's not, we're not in a honeymoon stage anymore. To get a good idea across, it takes a little bit, you know, your initial moves are over. You have to go for it. You have to work for it. So I was like, I didn't expect them to come back with a yes, but they both came back with a hell yeah. And that was the name of the record. And that is the name of the record. So that's where it came from. And it came from Dave Sardi, you know, adding Dave Sardi to our sound. If you hear this record and you go, what happened? Why does it sound like this? This is what happens when a band who really knows who they are, but wants to expand and blossom from that spot and not betray their roots, but expand and reflect influences that we have now and from the past, gets strapped onto a guy who, if you never meet Dave Sardi, he's simply two things. He's either a jet engine sitting on the tarmac waiting to go 600 miles an hour, or he's going 600 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. He has no in between. So once his attention is fully on you, be it on the phone, be it during email, be it, it's 600 miles an hour. And you better bring 600 miles an hour with you, or you're going to get blown out the back of the plane. You know what I mean?
So yeah,
that's what happened. And that's why the record sounds the way it does. It was a challenge. It was one of the great thrills of my life. And we made it during the pandemic. So it was the high point of my day. Every day, it was the only thing I had going on that didn't make me miserable, you know? Right. So that really was a big piece of it.
So did you go into the sessions with a lot of stuff already kind of completed in your head, or did you go in with a blank slate?
Kind of both. We had demoed a bunch of songs. We produced our bass player, Alex, produced our first record and recorded it with us in his living room. The second record was kind of a mixture of him producing plus another guy mixing the whole nine yards. The third record, you know, we were like, man, I mean, we kind of probably would want to work with someone else. You know, Alex was very adamant about it's time, you know, it's time to try something. So what ended up happening was we had demoed a bunch of songs that were probably at about the level of what we had on our first record. You know, we're like, these are good songs, you know, we like them, but, you know, we were like, can they go further? Can we push them further? So our manager, Kevin Levitan, had this idea of, hey, why don't you go in and, you know, we were like, we want to work with a producer. Let's give these songs to some people and see what they have to say about them. And Dave heard them and liked them, and he knew our past stuff. And so we had this, like, instead of going like, let's be a, are you going to be our producer? It was more like, that's like asking someone to marry you on the first date. You know, it's like, so what we did was kind of similar to how you would approach a new friendship or any new relationship. We went in soft with no expectations. It was like, we'll just meet each other. Let's work on a song from scratch. Let's just see what happens. And we walk into his studio one day, and I'm standing on the left of his board in his studio. And this is before the pandemic. His studio is in this, like, picture in your mind, an old Hollywood. Like, if you've ever seen that Red Hot Chili Peppers Blood Sugar Sex Magik documentary where they made the record in the house with Rick Rubin.
Yeah, it was a haunted house, right?
Yeah. Well, this was kind of similar. It's an old 20s house. It had a pool in the back that looked like Greta Garbo should be diving into it. You know, it's just – and – all the whole house was just a studio, and it was amazing to us because making a record in that house felt very at home, no pun intended, but we had made everything in the house, and it's like you weren't in a sterile studio. You were like, you're looking at a, you know, a piano in a living room that somebody lived in, you know, it just has a vibe. Go into the studio, he's in there, we haven't met him yet, there's this beat just blasting out of the room, and I'm like, man, I don't know who. I turn to Alex. And I think he was working on a band. Dave was working on this Band of Horses record at the time. I'm like, turn to Alex, our bass player. And I go, man, I don't know who he's killing it for in there, but man, he's killing something. You know, I mean, it just sounded so good. We walk in there and he's like, hi, I'm Dave. Hi, Chris, Alex, Mark, you know, record company. Nice to meet you. And he's like, hi. Yeah. And he's just kind of, the music's still going. He like turns it up. He's like, what do you think of this? I'm like, I think it's killer. I'm like, who is it? He's like, it's nobody. It's just a beat that I had that I was thinking, you know, it's just, it was a real drum beat that he had made. And he was like, you know, what do you think? Why don't we take this and write a song around it? And we were like, you mean we're not just going to sit down with acoustics dully, awkwardly. And, you know, we're a rock and roll band. It was nice to get like, I can't say that enough. 2021, we are a rock and roll band. And I was like, this is awesome. We're writing off a crushing drum beat. And the song that ended up being on the record and made it was the song called Get Up and Dance With Me.
Okay.
And it's, yeah, it's that song was the one that started our relationship with Dave. And then after a month or two, COVID hit. So then we kept writing. And then when the some of the sanctions lifted enough where it was like, okay, if you follow X, Y, and Z, you can go into this as long as you do this, 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 and that. We went in, and he called us. He says, we got the songs. Let's do it. So we went in, and we made this album.
Well, I'll tell you what. The record drops on October 8th. I'm going to have to get this on vinyl, of course, since you have to have a record by the record company on vinyl. That's part of that's the rule, right?
That's what we started because of vinyl records like 10, 11 years ago. Yeah.
How many do you think you have?
I don't have. I mean, my record collection burned up when I was going to school in Milwaukee at a house fire. So I never got back on the horse. I just started collecting guitars. But who did was Alex and his record collection. So all the records I had left, which was like about 60 or whatever it was, I gave to him. And he has probably about 2,000.
Oh, okay, nice. 2,000. Yeah.
And then I got a dear buddy. I just was at his house. That's a serious, serious, serious collector. He's probably got – I go there about 3 times a year, and we just listen to – music. He's got probably about 15,000 some. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Wow.
How many he has. He's like,
yeah,
got his own little radio station there. But yeah, I love vinyl. I also, I'm not being ironic when I say I fell in love with cassette over. I bought an old boombox on a whim, and like an old 1984, like Sanyo, excuse me.
Right.
Single deck. And I just saw Run DMC thing, and I just was like, I want one of those. So I bought that, got King of Rock on cassette, and then dug out all my old cassettes from my parents' house. They got all my Alex had some cassettes. He's like, you can have these. So I've been rocking the cassette. So this album is coming out on cassette too, to anybody who's got the means to play it or is dorky enough like me to want it.
Well, I have enough of an addiction with vinyl, so I think I'll just stick to that because I've already gone through the cassette phase as a kid as well. But
yep. But
October 13th here at St. Andrew's Hall, we'll have to get you a Riff shirt so next time we do this, you're dressed appropriately.
I got you. Although I have no shame in repping my fellow, you know, this is a great great young artist right here, Mike Kroll. So he plays some rock and roll. You guys might like him.
I like that shirt as well, so... All right, Chris, well, thanks so much for the time. The new record, like I said, Play Loud, your third album drops October 8th, and looking forward to definitely hearing the rest of it and playing it loud.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
You know, it's guys like Chris right there that make this job easy. Just really fun to talk to. That's the second time I've interviewed him. And like I said, he's got, as you just heard, a bunch of Detroit connections, which is really cool. But just a great stripped back, cool rock and roll band. So if you get a chance and they're coming in your neck of the woods, definitely check out the record company. Also on tour is this band called Dead Poets Society. Now, they're on tour right now with Bad Flower and a couple other bands. And they're making their way around the country as well. And this band is really interesting. Four guys schooled at Berklee School of Music. So we'll talk with Jack about that coming up. Lots of other things as well. I love talking to these bands that I really don't know a whole lot about because you can kind of dig in a little bit and see where they're coming from. Sometimes when these bands are a little bit more established, it's a little bit more difficult, but when these bands are, you know, not so established and they're kind of brand new, it's kind of cool to see, you know, where they came from, all that kind of stuff. So Jack was nice enough once again to join us on Zoom, which you can also watch in the description of the show. I'll post that as well. And we were off and running with Jack today from Dead Poets Society.
Things are great. We just got to Milwaukee today. We're going to shoot a music video tonight because we have a couple days off. And I don't know, we're just catching up on sleep.
Yeah,
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there you go. Did you guys play Louder Than Life this weekend?
We did play Louder Than Life.
Yeah, what'd you think about that?
Oh, it was awesome. It was great. That's the first U.S. festival we've ever played, so it was a good start to it.
Yeah, wow, what a festival, too. I was there a few years back, and that festival, man, they do it right with the two stages side by side. Were you on one of the main stages like that?
No, I was at the Disruptor stage, the one way on the other side, you know, like 42 miles away or something like that. Yeah.
But it's still pretty cool to see not only, you know, I mean, obviously it gets you guys a little bit of exposure, but I think I saw in a tweet you guys were saying, hey, waiting for Metallica and stuff like that. I mean, you know, to see the Metallica boys. Were you there on the Friday or the Sunday show?
We were there on the Sunday show.
So when they did the Metallica record backwards, the Black album, yeah.
yeah, exactly. And they played it backwards, too.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, musical and everything, right?
Yeah.
That would be something. But anyways, no, that's really cool. Those are some really cool festivals. And thankfully, things are getting back to normal. What kind of things are you guys doing as far as the pandemic is concerned?
What do you mean, like safety precautions?
Yeah, because it's been a little weird this year.
Yeah, it has. I mean, it's just wash your hands. You know, we wear a mask and we're really, really strict on not trying to get this tour stopped at any point. So everybody's constantly wearing masks backstage, and we take photos from the other side of the merch booth, and, you know, hand sanitizer. My hands are pretty much completely cracked and dried, and, you know, it's just basically bone because we've eroded all the skin away from all the hand sanitizer. And that's it. Just, you know, being a clean freak.
Yeah. So let's get to your band here, Dead Poets Society. I got to be honest, I really don't know that much about you guys. So fill us in on, like, you know, where you guys are from and all that kind of stuff.
So we live in Los Angeles, California, and half of us in Los Angeles, half of us in Orange County. And but we all formed at college in Boston, Massachusetts, way back in like 2013.
Yeah, way back.
Way back. Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys were at Berklee, right?
Yeah, Berklee College of Music.
Now that's really interesting because I know a few guys that went to Berklee. JD from Black Label Society, my friend Rob DeLuca from Spread Eagle, he's in a band called UFO. Those guys both went there.
Sick.
But you went to
nice band name.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So you guys went to Berklee, and you yourself, now if correct me wrong, you took guitar and then you decided, yeah, this isn't really for me, and kind of switched over to vocals. Is that right?
That is right. Yeah, I was sitting in a guitar lab my second year of Berklee, and so a guitar lab, to paint the picture, is a room with like 15 guitarists all playing the same chords. It's like pretty much as close to hell as you can get. And I'm watching at one point at the end of class, I'm watching like everybody take a solo, and I'm at the very end of the line, and I'm watching everybody play, and it's coming down the line, and it's getting closer and closer to me, and it gets to the guy right before me, and it just hits me. I'm like, oh my God, I suck at this instrument. And so right after that class, I went straight to the vocal department and switched my instrument over.
Now, I mean, you've got to be able to play a little bit of guitar, right?
Yeah, but I'm not like a guitarist, you know? I can't solo or do any of that stuff. And I don't really like solos to begin with, but I'm not like a good guitarist. I can play. You know,
so, you know, you're talking about Metallica just a few minutes ago. Can you appreciate, I mean, you have to appreciate a guy, right? Like James, the rhythm guitarist, singer, the whole thing.
100%. I can appreciate all of that and that genre of music and they've defined that genre. So I can 100% appreciate it, but I can't do it.
Now, with Dead Poets Society, what do people tell you sound like? Because I haven't been able to really place it yet.
We've gotten my voice. I've gotten Jeff Buckley. We've gotten like a heavier Nothing But Thieves or like a heavier Royal Blood before. We've gotten Muse and Queens and Jack White. We get that sometimes. So like, yeah, I mean, it's all bands we listen to. So probably a little bit. Little mixture of everything.
Yeah, I was going to say, so that's probably bands that you're influenced by then.
100%.
Yeah. So I have to ask you about the names. So I know you're on the screen, so you can't roll your eyes, but you've probably heard this question a billion times, but how you come up with the name Dead Poets Society? Obviously, there's a movie in the whole thing.
Yeah, so the band was actually named Dead Poets Society before I was ever in the band. It was a a completely different lineup. Except for the guitarist, our guitarist Jack, he's the only like original member of the band, and they named it Dead Poets. It's so anticlimactic. It was like they were sitting at like a lunch table or something, and they were like, "We need a band name," and they said, "Okay, what about Dead Poets Society?" Like, boom, there you go. And when I joined the band, I was like, "We should change the name of the band because it's a bad band name." And and they were like, we already made the Facebook page and everything. So I was like, okay. And then here we are 8 years later, and we're all like, we should have changed the band name. What are you going to do?
Well, you know, once you make the Facebook page, I mean, it's set in stone then, right?
It's like, yeah. It's like a blood contract with Mark Zuckerberg himself.
Right. So I guess your fans, you know, they would call you DPS or something, right? Is that?
Yeah, people call it DPS. Yeah, that's it. DPS, Dead Poets Society. Even DPS doesn't really roll off the tongue. What are you going to do? It becomes like a thing of its own at some point, you know?
Right, right. So are the other guys in the band now, they all went to Berkeley too and they graduated as well?
Yeah, they all went to Berklee College of Music. Our bass player, Dylan, actually joined the band only like 2-3 years ago. But he's been a homie of ours for, you know, since the beginning too. So when we needed a new bassist, he naturally stepped in. He was at Berklee too. So all Berklee boys.
Now, how does one get into Berklee?
You audition and then you pay way more money than you have. and that's pretty much it. They go, hey, can you pay? And we go, no. It's like, okay, it's okay. The bank will pull out a loan for you. Can you pay now? And you go, I think so. And you go, you're like, I can't. And they're like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We'll tackle on the bill at the end.
Right.
So, yeah, that's how you get into Berklee.
And then you go record your first record, and the record company says, you owe us a lot of money. And
then exactly.
You got to pay the bills for college and the whole thing.
That's a lot of this industry is just owing people money.
Yeah. Until you can fake it till you can make it, I guess. So what do your parents say when you say I want to go to Berklee School of Music?
I was really fortunate in that they've always been super, super supportive of me, and like they've 100% backed me from the start. And you know, they asked me when I was a senior in high school, and I was like, "This is really what I want to do." They're like, "Are you sure?" It's like, supposedly a very tough life, and I was like, yeah, 100%. And so I'm fortunate in that fact that they've always, you know, been there for me.
So because all you guys are schooled in music, are you ever writing songs and someone will say, yeah, that's not what I learned in school?
No, in fact, everything that we learned in school, we try to do the exact opposite.
Okay, I got you.
100%. I was actually just having a conversation with somebody about this, is that it's like going to school for music is an oxymoron. You can't, because if you want to be an artist, it's 100% an oxymoron. It's like you can't teach creation,
right?
That art has to come from you and solely you. And everything that you learn at school is just explaining or showing you something that has already been created. But it's not gonna be honest and true to you. You can't learn what's honest and true to you. That just comes from exploration in your own emotions.
I suppose you could learn, like, you know, history and different things, and maybe dissect songs and, you know, the stuff like that. But yeah, you're right, because it's like going to school to be a radio personality. You can't teach someone personality. You can teach them how to run a board, I suppose. But after that, it's kind of up to them.
Exactly, one to one. Yeah. Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit. You know, we got our local music show here, Motor City Riffs and stuff, and there's all people, you know, there's people that want to be in your situation. So how do you guys go about getting discovered?
Just keep trying to get better at songwriting. It's kind of like a not very satisfying answer, but it's just keep trying to be a better songwriter, and eventually you'll get to the point where you start creating things that evoke an emotion. You want to evoke an emotion. That is the whole point of art, you know, whether it's a bad or a good one. A bad emotion and a good emotion are more related than indifference. And a bad song is when somebody goes, it was good, it was okay, dude, it was okay. But if they hate your song or they love your song, then you know you're doing something right. And if you can get as close to that core emotion of what you're trying to say, then you're writing a good song. And then it's a matter of touring as much as possible so that people hear that song. You find the people that love you and that love your music and understand what you're trying to do. And then it's sort of a side note, if you want to get a little bit more technical, these independent distributors like TuneCore and CD Baby helped us so much when we were starting out. They have this thing where if you submit your music like 4 or 5 weeks early, I don't know if they still do this, but they'll pitch you for playlists on streaming platforms. And that really helped us out too. But at the end of the day, it's like you have to start with the most solid foundation, and that's the art. Just be as good as you can possibly be.
Yeah, at the end of the day, no matter what kind of a social media or technology we're in, if they're not good songs, They're not exactly. good songs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Be critical of your art, not yourself, and just always know that you can improve.
So what is it like for a young band like you guys starting out to all of a sudden, like, have, I guess, everything slowed down by a pandemic?
I mean, I'm not going to lie, it sucks.
Yeah.
You know, not being able to get out there and tour. But, you know, it's all fingers crossed behind us now. You know, we're hitting the road as hard as we can. We're getting back out there and we're doing what, you know, we love to do the most as a band, and that's play shows. It definitely slowed us down on the touring side, not necessarily the streaming side and the creating the album, because we were pretty much done with the album when lockdown happened. It was a matter of mixing it, and our mixing engineer lives in England, so it was going to be an email conversation no matter what. So we released the album, and then we couldn't tour the album, which really sucked. But we're making up on lost time now.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like you put the record out, you know, and it just sits there because you can't do anything, you know. And I get that you got streaming services and a lot of stuff that we didn't have when I was a kid growing up or whatever. But still, at the same point, you want to go out and play these songs in front of people and meet the fans and be road dogs, because that's how some of these bands break.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, I mean, we put so much into the live show. That's really where we feel that our music shines the most, you know. And it was kind of funny, you know, getting these playlists and having the radio play, and like, you guys have been such a big supporter of Coda, and that was huge for us. But the thing is, it's like, I don't get to go out to Detroit and meet you. So I'm sitting at home being like, okay, they're playing us. And you're sitting there and you're like, all right, I guess it's time to make lunch. And so, like, you know, it's like, it doesn't feel tangible until this happens.
Yeah, well, you're going to be here this coming Thursday along with Bad Flower. That's a cool tour. And at St. Andrews Hall, the famed St. Andrews Hall, have you ever watched Eminem's 8 Mile movie?
Yes, I have.
So the shelter is underneath St. Andrews Hall. So that's where the rap battles all took place.
No way.
Yeah, so there you go.
Oh, it's sick.
Yeah, tell them you want to take a walk down to the shelter and you can check that out too. So,
yeah, I will.
How's it going, the boys from Bad Flower? Just talked to Josh the other day. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I say this every single time, but, you know, I mean it, so I'll say it again. They've been, like, the most perfect, like, big brother band to us from the beginning. They've helped us out so much. They're all amazing people, everyone in the crew. And everyone they've added on to their crew for this tour, just equally nice. They know how to pick them.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's been so much fun.
Hey, by the way, you mentioned Coda. Whenever I hear the word Coda, I think of that Led Zeppelin record. Is that where that comes from?
Nope, not one. Completely different.
I'm sure it didn't.
The reason why it's spelled weirdly like that is because it actually stands for Codependence Anonymous. And the whole song is about, you know, living through a toxic relationship.
Mm. I got you. Well, I'll tell you what, Jack, it's really great talking to Dead Poets Society. The record's out, of course. The tour is up and cranked up with the guys from Bad Flower. And any new music in the works? You guys working on any new stuff? Or
we're always, always writing. So hopefully in 2022, we got some new stuff coming your way.
All right. Well, Jack, thanks so much for the time, man. Safe travels.
All right. Thank you so much, man. I'll see you soon.
Yeah, really interesting band right there with Dead Poets Society. Hey, hope you guys like that. Let's see, the record company. We got Asking Alexandria, Dead Poets Society. I've got a really cool interview lined up for next week. I'm not going to say anything. If you follow me on my socials, you may have already seen it, all right? But follow me at Meltdown WRIF. I'll be doing a Zoom interview with a really interesting rock star coming up next week. Okay, so once again, follow me on my socials at Meltdown WRIF on my Instagram. It's WRIF Meltdown. And feel free to hit me up anytime. I love talking music with you guys. If you want to float me an email, meltdown@wrif.com. And, you know, hey, if you got any connections to any bands you want me to interview, by all means, hit me up there as well. So I'm actually taking off this weekend, heading down to Nashville way. Going to see some rockers here and there. And I don't know, maybe I'll give you a little synopsis on that coming up next week as well. But I think some of it's going to be kind of on the down low. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. And like I said, next week, a really cool interview coming up. So check back, follow the podcast, subscribe, and follow my social. socials as well, because I'm always posting on there too.
Thank you for listening to Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. You can help this podcast grow by giving it a 5-star rating and writing a review on Apple and iTunes. Plus, feel free to subscribe and share it with your friends. Until next time, thanks for listening to Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.